It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 480. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. This show is brought to you in part by Instant House Call. Remotely support your customers unattended and on demand through firewalls. Try it free by clicking on the link on my website at miketechshow.com. Use the promo code MikeTechShow. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and staying subscribed to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me questions and suggestions for future show topics. My email address is miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message. The phone number is 240-949-2450. And that's Mike Tech Show, all one word, on Skype. Follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/miketechshow. Facebook, you can like the Mike Tech Show page, and that's at facebook.com/MikeNationNet. Also, we have the wiki at mtswiki.com. There you will find all the links to all the past shows, information on the show, the show notes from past shows. Great resource. Go back, check that out. That's again mtswiki.com. The title for today's show is Back to Basics. Basic troubleshooting skills, things that are right in front of us that we can take advantage of when we're trying to solve problems. Maybe it's a hardware problem, software problem, networking, internet problem. There are tools in front of us that are free and available on all computers that we need to remember to take advantage of. And what brought this up is the first story. I've been troubleshooting a problem for a client that has a Windows 7 peer server. 3-4 Windows 7 Pro workstations, but 3 mission-critical Windows XP stations. The reason why they still have XP, we still have some issues with some software running on Windows 7. I know, that sounds unbelievable this day and age, but there are still things that, especially a printing company, that their whole business is being able to send jobs to these very big expensive printers that, oh, don't have a Windows 7 driver or different issues because of Windows 7. So we have some legacy Windows XP equipment that needs to connect to shares on the Windows 7 box. And we may go a month with no problem, and then all of a sudden they lose the map drives. And not only the map drives are gone, you can't remap it without rebooting Windows 7 and rebooting the workstations. So this has been going on for a few months, off and on, and I've tried everything. I was going crazy. I've tried a fix-it, Microsoft fix-it patch that was recommended, but I forgot to do something, and that is check the event viewer of the system in question, the Windows 7 system that's acting like a server. I've never checked the event viewer. Ken, who's working for me part-time right now, and that's Wish I Knew in the chat. Last night, I'm heading to a client, and I'm on the cell phone with Ken, and we're chatting about different things that we can look at. And I said, boy, Ken, can you really just research this? Because my client just went through this again today. And late last night, Ken emails me and says, Mike, you know, did you check the event logs? It's amazing that as professionals right now, we didn't turn to that right away. I turned to that event log, and they were having this problem about 10 a.m. Well, there were hundreds of event ID 2017 in the event viewer. When I seen this, all it took was Googling event ID 2017. And it's the server was unable to allocate from the system non-paged pool because the server reached the configured limit for non-paged pool allocations. And it stopped all the connections of XP. There are two registry entries and then a reboot. I can't believe I seen that. And this led to the disconnects of the XP mapped drives. I logged in to the Windows 7 server, went to regedit, made the two registry changes, and rebooted. And of course, today everything's working. We won't know until we go more than a month of the of not having the problem. But certainly, I feel I'm in a better position now because I've addressed the error, and it was at the exact time that this was happening and causing all the systems to, or at least the XP systems, to not be able to connect. I believe I resolved that. I went back to basics by looking at the event viewer. Tonight's show is going to be full of those tips. If you don't know already, all you have to do is go to Control Panel, navigate to Administrative Tools, and then you have Event Viewer. That's it. Every server operating system has this. Every Windows workstation has this. Go to this first. Now, it's not going to have the answer all the time, but you know what? Has the answer a lot of times, points us in the right direction. Remember to check the Event Viewer. Something else that came up, and this fixed things, and this, I guess, is more noticeable when you're doing an update, something in the cloud. Maybe it's an update to Microsoft Security Essentials or something that is date and time based. Don't forget to look at the clock. Is the date and time correct on the system? I can't tell you how many times I've had an issue, a networking issue, especially on a domain where maybe the server time was wrong and therefore propagating the workstations as they were connecting were then also wrong. There's a lot of synchronization happening on an Active Directory network, a Windows network that has servers and domains. It's very important to have the correct date and time on all of the systems and that they be synchronized. Another item to put on that checklist is the clock of the local system, the clock of the server. Keep that in mind. Something else, very basic, and again, back to the administrative tools on the computer. Go to Control Panel, Administrative Tools, and check services. When you double click that, I'm going to give you a quick tip here. You can sort the services by the status. Click on the status and then go down, and now it's sorted whether the service is started or not. Now, here's what I look for, and the reason why I click on status, I'm looking for a service that is not started, yet the startup type is automatic. That means that service should have started automatically with the system, and if it did not, that could be a problem. So here's something that happens, or at least it happened on my older system, not my new one. A lot of times when I reboot it, I didn't have any sound. And I would look, there'd be a big X at my little speaker in the right-hand corner. And now I look at the sound service, and it wasn't started. I right-click, say, click start. The service starts, and now I had sound. So that was a fix for me with the sound service on my computer, my older workstation. This happens a lot on servers. Sometimes there's a dependency or there's a problem with a particular service and it doesn't start. Or maybe something happens on the server and the service stops. Lots of times on an Exchange server, the information store, which is the critical service for Exchange, sometimes hangs, has a problem, and it stops. And if someone's having a problem with email with one of my clients, the first thing I do, I log onto the server and I'm checking the Microsoft Exchange services. Are they started? The bigger problem is, let's say I write, let's say I find that the information store is stopped and I right click and I start it and all is better. Well, I got to go to the event viewer and find out why did that service stop, because we got a bigger problem that we probably have to address. Maybe we ran out of space on the C drive, and that often causes services to stop. So check for services. That's another thing that you can do. When there's a networking issue, and this is a great story, a few weeks ago at my biggest client, it's a manufacturer, I'm asked to go out into the plant. In one of the offices in the center of the plant, there's a system, an older XP system, and it has network access, but it also connects to several big pieces of equipment to control the different cutting and manufacturing of some parts on that equipment. The machine stopped communicating not only with the machines on the floor, but the internet. So they said, Mike, can you go out there, check this out? I said, absolutely. So I've never been out there before. And when you walk into a networking situation that a machine is not communicating with the network, the first thing you need to do is know and use a utility that is a TCP/IP utility that is part of every Windows operating system. And it's called ipconfig. Another tip before you use that, a lot of people don't realize, and you have access to more commands, is to start the command prompt in administrative mode. Now, how do you do that? Well, on Windows 7 or Windows 8 or even Windows XP, when you click run, when you type cmd and you're going to get to a command prompt, cmd.exe is now highlighted in the list. Before you hit enter or select it, right click and pick run as administrator, you're now at an administrative command prompt, which gives you more authority to run commands that you can't get when you just normally run cmd. That's just a habit of mine. I always make sure I'm in that administrative mode when I open the command prompt. Now, even though you're a local administrator, or for that matter, even if you're a domain administrator, you still have to do that to get the elevated privileges at the command prompt. So now I'm at the command prompt and I type ipconfig/all. And if you want to learn about a command, type the command with a slash question mark and you're going to get all of the options. So I type ipconfig/all, and then I scroll up to the Ethernet adapter, and I want to see what the IP address is. I want to see what the default gateway is. I want to see what the DNS and DHCP servers are. And I want to make sure that it's getting an IP address and that it's the right IP address. So one of the things you have to know, what is the IP network for that office, for that company? So on mine at home, it's 192.168.1. At the office that I'm at, it's 192.168.100 dot, and then the last octet for every, you know, the IP address. I see the IP address 169. That's a clue, and that's something I want to make sure everybody understands. If you ever see an IP address of 169, that means it was self-assigned by the system, and the system could not find a DHCP server to get an IP address. Immediately, I knew there was a problem with the cable or the hub or switch that's being connected to. I didn't have to go any further. Just by seeing that IP address, 99.999% of the time, there's network connectivity issue outside of the computer that's stopping you from getting an IP address. So the first thing I do is I start tracing the cable, and it comes and it terminates into this solid box. And I ask the guy, what's in that box? He says, I don't know. I open the box. You know what it is? It's a dead hub. the hub burned out. A, you shouldn't have had the hub in a sealed box anyway. The hub probably overheated over time, and that's it, and it died. And there was other pieces of equipment and, you know, printers and other things that were connected into this hub, and they just didn't realize they were also offline. I see this. We have a spare hub in the back. I go back. I start grabbing a new hub. I put it in there, fired up. Everything's working. There's a few things that this IP config command can really help you with. And one of them is to get a new IP address. You do an IP config slash release, and then you do an IP config slash renew. That will help you obtain a new IP address. An example, we changed the DHCP server at this plant a few weeks ago on a Saturday. We changed from the, I forget what brand of router, to an Untangle box. And this Untangle box is now acting as the DNS server, the DHCP server, and the default gateway. We had to make sure that all the computers were pulling from the new DHCP server, because all the computers had a lease where they got an IP address and they weren't going to go look at the for a new IP address, and we couldn't see them populating. So what we had to do was go to each workstation, do a release, do a slash renew, and we were now hitting the new DHCP server and getting the proper IP address. There's a lot to the IP config command. It can really help you troubleshoot issues. The first thing you want to look at is, like I said, the IP address. So you write that down. What's the default gateway? Write that down. Then take a look at the DNS servers. Write that down. If you're having a connectivity issue and you have an IP address that is correct, because now remember, we just determined that if you have a 169, that means it's self-assigned and it couldn't get an IP address. Well, what if it has a correct IP address? There's some basic steps on troubleshooting the TCP/IP stack for a computer and to make sure that everything's right. Ken reminded me this today. If you were taking the Microsoft Certified Engineer TCP/IP exam, this is one of the questions, which is the order in which you would ping to start determining where the problem is. And the first thing you do is you ping yourself. Can you properly get a response by pinging your own IP address? A lot of us forget to do this. Because, you know, if you don't get a response from pinging yourself, there you go. It's a TCP/IP problem that's local to the computer, and we have tools that can fix that. So keep that in mind. Ping yourself first, then ping the gateway. Can you ping the gateway with the IP address? Okay. Now, can we go further? Ping outside the gateway. Ping other devices on the network with known IP addresses. Maybe it's a server IP address or a static printer IP address. Ping yahoo.com or google.com and see if you can get a result from that ping. If you're not getting results when you ping a website, but you get results if you ping the IP address, that tells us something. That tells us that there's a DNS issue. Now, we go back to our IP config, and there's a great command that if you want to basically reset the cache for all your DNS settings locally to give a, because you make a change somewhere, and maybe you're fixing something and you want to make sure that you can get out, you type IP config space slash flush DNS. Hit enter. It flushes the DNS cache so you can begin again. There are so many commands. I'm going to have a link from Microsoft on all the different options of IP config, and you should look at them because there are just so many more examples that I didn't even cover. I'm just hitting you with the basics of the basics and helping you put together a strategy when you are approaching a problem for troubleshooting. We got check the event viewer, check the services, check the clock, check the IP. Now, getting back to what if you can't ping yourself? Well, we have the Windows all-in-one repair tool that has options for fixing that. And we can check them, let it repair, reboot, see if we can now ping ourselves, and then work our way out. There's something else that, let's go back to, we get that 169 address. Don't forget to look at the cable. That's something that we overlook. The network cable. Maybe something happened in that network connection. Test the cable. Have some, if you're doing networking support, you're consulting, then you better carry a cable tester. They're cheap. And you can put, disconnect the cable at each end and then put it in your cable tester and see that you're getting lights in connection and that everything is coming up, that cable's good. Because if it's not, throw it away, get another cable, and test. That, I find, a lot of people still hand make cables. I know a lot of people are great at it and have no troubles. I don't trust that. The only time I want to see a cable, and it's not handmade, it's punched down properly, it's going from a patch panel to a jack in a wall. And there's punch down tools to properly make sure that that is connected and that the wiring is the right colors and everything set up properly. Then I believe in patch cables that are new and purchased and not made. I run into a lot of people that believe in making every one of their cables. That's great. Good for you. I'm not one of them. And I, over the years, have seen many, many issues with handmade cables. Now, I want to move on to another topic in basic troubleshooting. And again, I experienced this today. I have a client that for some reason, she was getting emails from a client when there was no attachment. When there was an attachment, she wouldn't get the email. Yet this person sent an email with the same attachment to other people in her office, they would get it. I was trying to troubleshoot with her the possibilities. First, if she wasn't getting an attachment, she's a Google Apps user, and I'm thinking, were the attachments greater than 20 meg? That's an obvious one, but if they're too big, what was the extension? Because some extensions by default are blocked. So we want to make sure. Nope, it was just a PDF. They were small. They didn't exceed the size limit. So I said, did you check the spam folder? She checked the spam folder. No problem. I said, you're an Outlook user. Did you check the junk mail folder on Outlook? She checked, not there. I said, I'll look into this again tonight. I'll try to figure out some more things for you to try. I said, you know, in the meantime, send me the domains of that user. Maybe that user's having trouble, but remember, they were able to send to another person right in her office. We visited a client today, Ken and I. We get back to my desk right here. And I open up my email and the new email comes in. I was like, oh, we got an email from my client here. And she said, she solved the problem. Don't spend any more time working on it. Thanks a lot. But she didn't tell me the solution. So I write back. I'm like, hey, how did you solve the problem? She wrote back. She had filters. She doesn't know how they got set up on her Google Apps, her Gmail account. And the filters were filtering the email. There's something else. When she said that, it made me think of, are there any default rules running on your email client, especially Outlook? A lot of people have some default rules that could be taking that message and moving it somewhere, and they didn't realize it. Make sure to look for things being filtered at the web client of the email host, and look for rules that might be active and running on your local email client. Again, basic troubleshooting for email problems. We looked at the obvious. Is it going into a junk mail folder? Is it going into a spam folder? Is it over the limit? Are you sending illegal extensions that could be blocked? And now we add filtering and rules that all these things that could prevent the delivery of a mail message. This takes us to a very important topic, and it's, I was going to say basic troubleshooting, but it's more than that. It's just basic good practice, and that's backups. I want to talk about desktop backup for a minute. If you are a Windows 7 or Windows 8 user, you have the system image capability that comes, that's included with Windows 7 and Windows 8, and it's okay, but I'll tell you what, I found that it fails frequently, and it's not as reliable. It's nice to have, and it's better than nothing, but it's not perfect. And if your data is that critical, if you're running a home business, if you have clients, maybe they don't have a server, but they have mission-critical data, maybe their attorney, financial advisor, whoever they are, and they have important data on their desktop, there should be a local backup. There should also be a cloud backup. You should have both. I'm going to recommend a free piece of software that we've never discussed on the Mike Tech Show. And this piece of software is called Backup Maker. That's right. It's free. It's easy to use. And I'm going to put a link in the chat room here. It's by a company, Ascomp, and it's .de. Take a look at this software. It has a great, easy-to-use wizard to configure your backup. It'll walk you through even backing up your bookmarks and just everything. Check that out. That's a free program. That's something else to put in our toolbox to recommend and to use. Now, I like Shadow Protect. And Shadow Protect for desktop, it's $90. Now, to some of us, that's a lot of money. It's a big bite. But I want you to ask yourself, if I've lost everything on my computer and it crashed, is it worth $90 to be able to get it all back easily? If I have thousands of pictures, if I have home movies, is it worth it? Isn't $90 a minor investment in our data? Very important. Kevin asked in the chat a great question. Is it better than FABs? I don't look at FABs as a backup. I look at FABs as a tool to transfer data from one operating system to another. You want to get a full system image to be able to recover. I don't use FABs as an end-all backup. I use FABs as a tool to move someone from one operating system to another, from an older computer to a newer computer. And, you know, maybe changing the profile on a domain. I've used FABs. I mean, FABs I use all the time, but it is not what I would recommend as the final solution for backing up your system. So keep that in mind. Now we're going to add another layer. You should be backing up to the cloud. It costs money, and you should be looking at services like Mozy Pro, like Jungle Disk. These are great services that will help you back up to the cloud. I recommend them, and I have clients using those services. Yes, there are other ones that I purposely have not mentioned, and if I didn't mention them, there's a reason. And that's because I don't believe in them, and I'm not going to give them any credit here. So there are a couple very, very popular backup services and cloud-based backup services that I don't like. And I don't like because they don't back up all the files. They take too long. So I have some issues with some of these other services. Next week, I'm going to talk about my personal interaction with the ransomware virus CryptoLocker. And a lot of you have followed up with me with some emails. There's lots to talk about. Next week's show will be 100% dedicated to a story of I lived this on Monday and how myself and Ken dealt with this hands-on. We were confronted with CryptoLocker and how we battled and won. And we're going to talk about that. That's why I wanted to close the show with backups, because we're going to naturally lead into this and we're going to talk about this next week. I want to recap. We covered basic troubleshooting tools and things you should be looking at as you approach trying to solve a problem. The clock, date and time settings, event viewer, services, IP config. And you know what? There's many, many other command line tools that you should look at other than IP config. That's just one. We also talked about troubleshooting mail that's not getting delivered and all the possibilities, the simple things that we can check to help for mail delivery. The better we are at troubleshooting and solving problems, the more you're going to be trusted. Maybe it's going to help you within your own company. Your clients, you're going to get more clients if you have a methodology and an approach to troubleshooting and solving problems, which will lead to possibly making more money. These are the tools, the strategies, and the best practices that you should be putting in place as a whole way of life as a tech that you need to embrace. And it's going to lead only to good things. You're going to solve problems. You're going to become a great troubleshooter. And it's going to lead to more money, because you're either going to get a promotion at work, you're going to be able to get a better position within IT, within your organization, or you're going to get more clients because you're going to be known as the go-to man, the guy that can solve things. And that's what you want. I want to thank everybody for listening and downloading and staying subscribed to the show. I really appreciate it. And if you purchase from Amazon, or you know anybody that purchases items from Amazon, don't forget to use my link. Share my link. It's amazon.mikenation.net. Your price stays the same, but a small commission comes back to help the Mike Tech Show and support the show, and I really appreciate it. And you guys did a phenomenal job for the month of October, and I want to thank you. Keep it up. I so appreciate all of your support. Got a great show lined up for next week that's very important, so you're going to want to hear that. And that's it. Thank you very much. I will talk to you next week, same time, same channel. Bye-bye, everybody.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.